Case this morning, Colley versus Peace Health.
May it please the court, I'm Mark Lehman. I represent the Colleys in this appeal. I'd like to, I suppose we'll reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal.
All right.
The facts of what happened are relatively clear in certain respects. Mr. Colley had extreme pain, went into the hospital, a person who could have a normal conversation, who was able to interact with his family, was able to drive, was able to do a lot of things. He came out with a person with no short-term memory. There's no evidence to dispute any of that. What we then faced was a defense case in which virtually all of the defense evidence was irrelevant. The question, of course, with Mr. Colley is a neurologic one. Did the events that happened, and there's also no question that he suffered a respiratory arrest, and there's no question that the morphine that he was administered was part of the cause of that respiratory arrest. I mean, the doctor who says she ordered him to be monitored said that was a cause. We presented a neurologist to answer this neurologic question who said that, yeah, it was the absence of oxygen, which is what caused this. And then there's no neurologist who is presented by the defense, but instead we have all sorts of doctors testifying to all sorts of things that have nothing to do with this case, and we can take them one at a time if we want, and we have the defense lawyer in this case impeaching our liability witnesses with the use of a certificate of merit, the requirement of which our Supreme Court has held is unconstitutional.
It was just the one witness that was impeached at trial, isn't that true?
They were allowed to impeach two. I think in going back through the record, they only used this opportunity once. And then they did also cross-examine Mrs. Colley about the original complaint in the matter, which alleged negligence in the emergency room. The reason for that is because from looking at the bare record, you can't tell whether the people in the emergency room told the hospitalist or anybody further down the line about his sleep apnea.
Does a cross-examination of Mrs. Colley on that point go to the certificate of merit argument? She didn't have to file a certificate of merit.
No, of course not. But what it does do is it compounds the error of allowing the cross-examination of the nurse with the certificate of merit because the idea is trying to show, I suppose, is that, you know, now you're blaming the hospitalist. Before you were blaming the emergency room. You're just fishing around here for a good target. And the idea that somehow this certificate of merit, which was held to be unconstitutional, the use of it is not unconstitutional when the acquiring of it makes no sense. What happens is not only are you required at a time when it is virtually impossible to get this certificate, which the Supreme Court said is inherently unfair, but now you're going to be punished by having it used against you in a trial. Now, somehow the idea the question here isn't whether you needed to get it. It's just the question of whether we can beat you over the head with it is less damaging. That makes no sense to me. I mean, this is a fortiori. If you looked it up in Black's Dictionary, this would be what a fortiori looks like. I mean, if it is completely unfair to make you get this, for to allow us to beat you over the head with, it has got to be unfair. And especially when it is combined with, you have a radiologist who testifies about brain scans. He then says that he can't say either that the absence of oxygen caused or didn't cause Mr. Colley's problem. You have a sleep apnea doctor saying that the radiologist's information is irrelevant because you can have these symptoms without it showing up on radiology, or you could have the radiologic findings without any symptoms. So it doesn't tell you anything.
Let me ask you a question. I know, Mr. Lehman, that you do cases in this area. I'm just wondering if this issue with the certificate of merit being used for impeachment to show a prior inconsistent statement, if that's something you've encountered, if you're aware of that happening.
No, with
anyone else?
No. Okay. I frankly have not seen anyone try to do it.
That's I wondered if it was.
There was a window. There was only a window during which you could do this.
Right.
I will ask. Mr. Burnham had the courage to do it, and maybe other lawyers didn't. I don't know. I still think that there is no way. There, if you look at their brief, in some ways it's helpful, because what they do is, in support of their argument, they cite the concurring opinion. Well, the reason it's concurring is because there were less judges than there were in the majority opinion, which is what I was citing. And it's like that commercial they have for T-Mobile or whatever, where the guy with the little kids and more is better. Well, more judges on your side is better. And I don't know why, you know, we should follow the minority opinion of the judges who struck down the statute in the first place. The last part of this is, as I said, you had two doctors. Both of them specifically testified that they cannot say that the respiratory arrest didn't cause his memory loss. And they also couldn't say that any of these other things that they say cause memory loss were themselves the cause. The best they can do is say he had some conditions before which could, under certain circumstances, cause memory loss, but I'm not going to connect that to this case at all.
Well, why should they have to? Isn't that what defense expert witnesses always do? I mean, in other words, they do not have the burden of proving that any specific thing was the cause of your client's injury.
What
they do
then
not even have to agree that there was an injury. They can't be testifying or be made to testify that, yes, you have an injury, but we didn't cause it. They can say, though, that we don't think that there's enough evidence to allow an expert. I mean, we realize there's another doctor who does say that, but we don't agree. We don't think you can say that because there's just too many other explanations.
Well,
isn't that fairly common? Yes or no?
I can answer it if you give me a sentence.
Yeah, I'll give you.
That is exactly what this court's opinion in Stedman versus Cooper says. When you bring in an expert, and in that case it was a biomechanical guy, when he brings in an expert and says this kind of collision usually doesn't cause an injury, and which is further, by the way, than any of these doctors did. They were... You know, they wouldn't even say that this kind of oxygen loss didn't cause it. And the only relevance of the testimony is on causation. And so if you can't somehow link it up, we spent, this is the medium is the message, we spent hours and hours and hours listening to experts, all of whom said irrelevant things.
May it please the Court, Jeff Burnham on behalf of Peace Health St. Joseph Medical Center. First, I just wanted to note that from a factual standpoint, there was sufficient evidence that there were a multitude of things going on with Mr. Colley that affected his memory. And there is, in particular, Exhibit 14 is the one that says, where he says that, or at least he told the doctor, that he was having memory difficulties, and this was 5 months before the hospitalization. And the doctor himself concluded that there had been memory loss issues for Mr. Colley. So those things, along with depression and sleep apnea, severe sleep apnea, failure to use the CPAP, those sorts of things were all going on prior to this hospitalization. So there is evidence that there were alternative causes. And I'll note as well that these experts testified not only that this particular respiratory event, of which there was no evidence that he was actually hypoxic, according to the medical records, even though there's a respiratory arrest, there was no hypoxemia that was found.
Let me ask you this.
Yes,
so,
sure.
Counsel says that it was undisputed that Mr. Colley could drive, he could interact well with his family, but when he came out, he had short-term memory loss that he did not have previously. Is it true that that is undisputed?
No, it was disputed, and in fact, we took the deposition of the doctor, the sleep clinic doctor, who made those notes of memory difficulty and memory loss, and he specifically confirmed what he found in the history that Mr. Colley gave him of memory difficulties, and in his finding of memory loss. Yes.
The name of that doctor, if you were
Vega. It's a hyphenated name. Vega.
Okay.
Yes.
All right.
In any event, the all of this causation is not really even relevant to this particular appeal because the jury never even reached causation. The jury found that there was no negligence on standard of care. And so whether these other experts testified and whether they could and whether it goes to the weight of the evidence as opposed to whether it's irrelevant and shouldn't be considered, all of that is irrelevant because the jury never even considered the causation issue. So really the only issue here on appeal is this certificate of merit issue, which goes to the standard of care witnesses that the plaintiff called at trial. Now, with regard to those two witnesses, Dr. Pantelit, we didn't have to use he's the doctor, we didn't have to use the certificate of merit because he readily admitted when I questioned him that he had had a previous opinion and then he had altered that as time went on. That was fine. The other witness, the nurse, Nurse Covington, Sarah Covington, she testified that the records were clear that there was negligence in the overnight and early morning hours, particularly with regard to Nurse Dawn Hooker and with regard to the other care providers at that time. And so I used the Certificate of Merit simply as a prior inconsistent statement to impeach her and had her admit that she, in fact, had looked at all the records, had nothing to do with additional discovery. She had looked at all the records, including the ER records and the overnight records, and that she had agreed and signed this statement that said she was only criticizing the nurses in the ER. None of those nurses were their care was not at issue at trial. Only the overnight care was at issue at trial.
She had looked at all the records. Are you speaking of the records, the set of records that Mrs. Colley herself personally obtained long before she filed the lawsuit, obviously, because she had to get a certificate of merit at that time before she filed the lawsuit, and this was before she could have engaged in any discovery.
Yes.
So that's a fairly limited set of information, and it really is not typical for an expert opinion to be delivered in the course of a lawsuit before basic discovery has been done.
Yeah, you know, if her excuse, and by the way, ER 613 allows a witness who is confronted with a prior inconsistent statement to explain that. And that's what the judge ruled, that these witnesses could go ahead and explain.
It's a pretty long explanation, isn't
yeah.
it? I mean, it would take me the rest of your 5 minutes to put everything in context about how what the perceived political problem was with malpractice lawsuits and the legislature's decision to enact a statute and the controversy about the statute and the enactment of the statute and the challenging of the statute by plaintiff's lawyers and the decision of the Supreme Court and that it had a various opinions and what it meant. That's a long explanation.
Yeah, if you wanted to explain all of that, you're absolutely right. But here, the explanation was...
Is it not unfair to expect the jury to understand the significance of that certificate of merit if they do not know all that history?
No, they don't need to understand all of that history. All they need to know is what records did this witness take a look at, and was it unfair for her to give an opinion at that point as opposed to an opinion later after she had reviewed everything else? Now, this witness specifically admitted, yeah, I looked at all of the records, and I specifically asked her, did you look at anything else afterward? I looked at the deposition transcript. Did you look at any other records? No, no other records. She looked at all of the records that she then testified about initially when she made that opinion, and she testified to that. And so had she said in trial, yeah, I made that initial opinion, but later on I looked at other records, and therefore I changed my opinion, that would have been much different, and judge perhaps would have ruled differently if that had been the case. That was not the case. And here, she looked at all the records.
Motion in limine.
I'm sorry?
You're talking about the judge's ruling on the motion in limine.
There were a couple of, not only motion in limine, but also during the actual testimony, Mr. Lehman objected at that time as well. So we had the opportunity to hear all of that, including what she was testifying to when he made his ruling.
Are you aware that, of are you aware of that has been used more than once in these trials in your own experience?
I've used it in another deposition. I'm not aware of what other lawyers have done. But no, I mean, Mr. Lehman's right. This is a fairly narrow issue, and it's not anything that's probably going to come up again because there was just a narrow window when these things were required, and they're no longer required. So it's not like it's an ongoing issue that's ever going to come up again.
That's what I wondered.
But the whole point of this, and the reason that we cited Putnam and that we went through Judge Madsen's concurring opinion is because she actually analyzed this issue of the medical records, kind of what you were talking about. Whereas the main opinion did not analyze that issue. They just simply said, well, If we require this, then they're not going to have access to the courts. It's too much of a burden to have access to the courts. So number one, in this case, there was access to the court. Not only access, but we had a full-blown discovery, full-blown trial. So there's no issue here with regard to Mr. Cawley having access to the courts. And then number two, Judge Madsen went through and analyzed this medical records issue. And she was basically saying, look, this really isn't an access to the courts issue. It's a legislative separation of power issue. And she explained why she didn't think this was an access to the courts issue with regard to this. And her main argument there was that people have the right to go get their medical records and have people look at them, and including other doctors who are experts. That's why she didn't think. Now, we use that in our briefing because the point here is that there was no issue with regard to whether all of the records were obtained and reviewed. Nurse Covington actually admitted that she had looked at all of those records and didn't look at any other additional records with regard to her opinions. And so that argument that somehow, you know, they have this burden that they can't get over, that's not the case here. In fact, they had all of those records, and they were able to review all of those things. And that's why we cited Judge Madsen's analysis of that, and I think it's important to take a look at. And by the way, the report of proceeding pages for Ms. Covington's testimony on this and my impeachment of her is 167 through RP 167, 168. Sorry, 166 through 168.
What about these unpublished opinions that you've been citing in your brief? How is that excusable at all? We have a very firm rule against citing unpublished opinions.
Sure, I think the rule says that you're not supposed to cite them as authority. I just thought that those would explain better than I could.
Authority. We do not approve of that.
Okay.
That is not the only way that you can cite an unpublished opinion is if it's in the same case and needed to explain something like collateral mm-hmm. estoppel. We do not like to get unpublished opinions attached to briefs or cited as authority or in footnotes or any other thing.
Okay. I apologize for that. And I didn't cite them for authority. I just
thought. Yes, you did.
I just thought that
they were being used as authority. You want us to read them and follow them.
Okay.
And be informed by them. That is citing as authority.
Thank you, Your Honor.
What the nurse said, and this is how this came up in the first place, and this is, maybe you want to start by 2 minutes.
Oh, I'm sorry. You have, I think, 3 minutes. Is that what you read?
Two. I'm not going to cheat here.
Okay, good.
this is how it came up in the first place. If you just look at the records, the issue here, and what we were trying to prove, and I think this is a simple thing to prove, is a guy who's got terrible sleep apnea, is getting a load of narcotics, you just put a pulse oximeter on his finger so you know if his oxygen's dropping. Okay? In the records, it is impossible to know when the various people found out he had sleep apnea. That only came out through the depositions, which were read later. So if you looked at the emergency room records, where they are loading him up with narcotics, and then they're shipping him off to the overnight unit, there is no indication that anyone in the emergency department told anyone further on. Now, as it turns out, when you take the depositions, which were not in the records, you take the depositions, the nurse testified, yes, I knew he had sleep apnea, and I told the doctor. The doctor then says that she ordered pulse oximetry, which wasn't done. The nurse says, I never got that order. Well, I mean, the jury obviously didn't care, but nonetheless, you couldn't have looked at these records and gotten any such information. It is the exact unfairness that the Supreme Court found in Putman. With respect to the fact that these are causation witnesses, basically, the argument of the defense here is that Mr. Colley was damaged goods. And I want you to read the testimony of this doctor, Vega, who they say says he had a memory loss before. There was one question. Are you drowsy during the day? And when you're drowsy during the day, do you have memory problems? He said yes. The testimony about what it was after this particular event, he has no short-term memory at all.
Thank you.
That's like saying I saw something in the record that you had a hangnail and that would explain your amputated foot.
Thank you very much. Thank you. That concludes our docket for today, and the court will be at recess.
All rise. Court is in recess.